Hi, everyone. This is Nancy, and welcome to the Metaphysical World and More. I host the show today. I'm going to have another great guest on, but just before I bring him on and introduce who he is, I'd like to make an announcement for all the people who are listening and have listened to my show. You've heard me talk about my 501c, the nonprofit organization called the Child's Miracle Mind. What I'm doing for right now is looking for people who like to donate at least a dollar, and you can send it to my email address, which is nwallace, that's W-A-L-L-A-C-E, 77 at hotmail.com. And again, it's for my nonprofit organization called A Child's Miracle Mind, and all donations would be appreciated so we can get this going. And in the meantime, we're going to bring Tom on. So hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Nancy. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How have you been?
I've been well.
Good.
Well.
Great.
The
now,
new
Tom,
year's starting well.
Starting well. Good. Tom, you've got a lot of books behind you already.
Mm-hmm.
But before we talk about each of the books, because I would really like to talk about each one of them, I would like for you first to explain a little bit about who you are and kind of what got you going to writing these books for all the people.
Okay. Well, I've been a corporate trainer and a performance coach for more than 20 years. And I have worked with a diverse group of people from business leaders to athletes in the area of performance. I also, my educational background is I have a PhD in health, but I also have a background, I have an MBA, so I'm pretty diverse educationally. I'm a clinical hypnotherapist. I work with people to overcome defeating blocks, psychological and emotional blocks, and programming from the past. I started writing books because I really believe that that's probably the platform for getting this message of performance and getting from where you are to where you want to be to the greatest number of people. So that's why I started writing books, and basically my books all come from the subject matter. My books all comes from the talks that I give.
Okay, so one of the books that you have written is called The ABCs of Successful Living.
Uh huh.
Now, was that the first one that you did?
No, that's the second book. I actually the first book I did three in the ABC series: The ABCs of Total Health, The ABCs of Successful Living, and then the last one in that series was the ABCs of Effective Leadership.
Okay. So the ABCs, what prompted you to do it like ABCs for people?
We created a series called the Got a Minute series. If you have a minute, you can read a chapter. And we based each chapter off of, I actually wrote this from the ABCs. There are 26 letters, and then what I did was I wrote two chapters based on every letter of the alphabet. And that way people can read. What I suggest that my readers do is read one chapter a week and try to put that into practice. If you were to do that each week, then that's 52 weeks. So and at the end of a year, it could be pretty life-transforming.
That sounds pretty good. Most people look at them and go, ABCs, that must mean it's real easy to do.
Well, they are. You know, the things I write about, Nancy, and these principles are pretty simple. I'm not saying they're easy,
mm-hmm.
but they are simple to do. And I believe in developing habits, that we do based on the little things. It's that compound interest principle. You know, if we put a little bit in each day, then the cumulative effect of that is profound mm-hmm. after a while. When my coaching clients come to see me, I'm not interested in the monumental changes they need to make in their lives. I want to know what the small things are, the little things they're going to start doing on a daily basis, the changes that they can make on a daily basis to have a much greater impact on their lives in the long run.
Okay.
And that's what the ABCs, really the whole premise of the ABCs books.
Can you tell the listeners maybe a little bit, say, about your very first book that you wrote, how some of the things that if they put into practice every day would help them actually do a total transformation in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the ABCs of Total Health, actually the first chapter, the first A word is acceptance. And we all have to accept who we are. You know, we can't be anybody else. We have to, you know, and we were all born with unique abilities. We were all born with an individual song, a unique song that we sing to the universe. And so it just begins with accepting who you are and loving who you are, and to be able to look yourself in the mirror each day and say, I like you. I love you. Because we can't give away that which we don't have. And then I go through that book. It's a very well-balanced book on health. You know, I talk about the value of music. I talk about the value of taking a walk, the value of extending grace to others, and the value of forgiveness in our lives. All of these affect our health in some way.
And I totally agree with what you're saying. In fact, when I do the intuitive coaching that I do for people, I use the same probably principle that you do, that you really have to like yourself, love yourself, before you can expect somebody else to do that, or you can even expect to give it out.
Absolutely.
And people have a really tough time with that, because I tell them the same thing. Look at yourself in the mirror. Smile like you're really great, like thrilled with who you're looking at, and simply say, hey, I like me. I love me. And people, they go, can you really do that? It's like, just try it. You might find out that you like it. You know, so people have a hard time with looking at themselves in the mirror. And why do you think that's probably the hardest thing for people to do?
I think that it's based on, a lot of this is based on what we're trying to do is to change individual self-talk. You know, that self-dialogue that we have. And for some people, it's really tough. And the reason why, I read the result of one article one study that some behavioralists did. And I don't know how they came up with these numbers exactly, but they said that that the average person, by the time we were 18 years old, were told 148,000 times what we can't do,
mm-hmm.
or the word no. You know, think about what we do with kids. No, get out from there. No, 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 you can't do that. No. And so our self-talk, our very deepest levels of self-talk, is pretty negative, and it's pretty self-defeating. We're continually telling ourselves what we can't do, or if we're, you know, that we're not worthy. And comparatively, most of us were only told yes or what we could do a very small number of times. That may have been, you know, a few thousand. It could have been a few hundred. Mm-hmm. One man in a workshop told me that it was probably less than 10 mm-hmm. for him. And then we wonder why people have negative self-talk, or we wonder why people are critical of themselves. Well, that's why. And so when we get in the practice of standing in front of the mirror each day and saying, I love you, we may not believe that at first. But the way the subconscious mind works is it believes what it hears repeatedly,
mm-hmm.
even though it may be a lie when we first hear it. And so if we continually tell the conscious mind that with our self-talk, then the subconscious mind eventually gets wind of it and says, okay, well, if that's what he's going to continue to profess, then that's what we'll believe and act on. And so there's a whole different dynamic in our behavior. We become that which we think about. We become that which we are in our minds.
Mm-hmm. Do you think people repeating positive affirmations to themselves could be a big benefit for most people?
Oh, yeah. I think that affirmations are great, and I think that's a start. Now, I believe in Jim Rohn once said that affirmations without action is the beginning of illusion. Now, we can't, it's not just enough we're not going to get there on affirmations alone.
Mm-hmm.
But what that's going to do is going to change our thinking, which then is going to help manifest a different behavior set there. But affirmations are definitely a place to start. And as we begin to affirm that over and over and over, then we believe it, and we act upon that which we believe.
Okay. Because I'm also a firm believer that people can say lots of positive affirmations, but unless they do something about what they are saying, it's probably not going to turn out the way they think.
I think you're probably right, except that if we use those affirmations enough, but that's an action, that's a positive action in and of itself. If we continue to do that over and over and over and over and over, then there's some particle of belief that we have in the words. And so that particle of belief then transforms into some sort of behavior, because we behave based on our belief and our core identity, who we think we are.
Yeah. Let's talk about a little bit for the kids of today, because everybody has got their own idea about the kids of today. They call them indigo children. They call them children with have ADD, ADHD, or behavior problems. If there's a child that has that kind of energy going on, no matter what label you want to give it, what would be a better way of handling, some of their, maybe their stubbornness or outburst or them just being totally independent? What would be a positive way rather than what they're trying to do with the kids?
Mm-hmm. Well, children are I believe that, and we have a lot of ADD, and I think that I really believe that the biggest perpetrator of ADD in our society is television.
Okay.
We look at each frame is about 4 seconds long. So, kids who sit in front of the TV for hours, it almost becomes hypnotic for them. It's almost like watching a strobe light.
Mm-hmm.
It causes the mental process to blink. And so that's one of the things that we can do with children is limit the amount of television they watch. Also, it has to do with diet. We know that a diet of junk food and high sugar and high fat diets also contribute to a lack of focus and concentration. So we want to help our children with their diet, and a lot of schools are doing that today. I just read the other day about a school system in one of the local cities here that had taken the candy and the sweets and the soda pop and all that out of the schools and replaced it with fruit juices and things to help the children to have a better diet. But also children need to be engaged in something that instills or facilitates some discipline, personal discipline in their lives, whether it be sports or some activity. It could be music, some activity. Martial arts is another good activity for that, where children become disciplined in what they do. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, we're all slaves to two masters emotionally, and that's reward or pain and pleasure, or reward and punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we create rewards for children that's pleasurable enough to be an incentive for them to start to practice self-discipline, then there's a much greater chance they're going to do that. And then also we need to convey in some way that if they don't become disciplined, then they're not going to like the result. Mm-hmm. There's a consequence that they're going to they will eventually pay that's going to be painful,
mm-hmm.
and they need to be able to see that.
Mm-hmm. And I agree wholeheartedly. Now you also the ABCs of total health, and then ABCs of successful living,
mm-hmm.
and the ABCs of effective leadership.
Right.
Do you think people have a hard time with the leadership part in general?
Well, the leadership part is, I think that leadership is more of an art. Managing is a science.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we expect people who are managers or have management experience to be great leaders, and that's not true. But it is a learned, it can be a learned skill. We must, study just like we do technical skills. We must, with leadership, we must study leadership principles and understand those to a greater degree to be a great leader. And we must have a desire also to be a great leader, and it helps also to have some good examples for leadership. Unfortunately, probably the majority of us, especially in the corporate world, have as our example for leadership negative examples.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know what not to do as a leader, but every experience that we have can be useful for us. But leadership is it's something that we don't in today's world. We look at, there aren't, quite frankly, there aren't a lot of great leaders out there.
I agree with that one.
But
wholeheartedly, I really agree with that one.
Well, and one of the biggest problems, one of the biggest issues with leadership today is the character issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that a lot of people don't know how to be leaders. There are some other character issues, greed and a lack of self-control. You know, we can be incredibly intelligent, but not practice a very high degree of self-control. And we see that in leaders today. We see that from our political leaders to our business leaders.
Mm-hmm. The ABCs of each book, do each of them start out with acceptance, or is there a different, like, letter for each book?
No, they start, each one of them start out with a different, they start out with a different chapter. Like the ABCs of Total Health, the first chapter is acceptance, the second chapter is attitude.
Okay.
I talk about the value of attitude. The third chapter, the B words are balance and breathing.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about, and I give a breathing technique to for relaxation and also for focus.
Okay. And so, like, does the successful living start off with the same words, or have you chosen different words for it?
No, I've chosen different words for successful living. Successful living actually starts out with affirmations.
That's good.
And then the second A word in successful living is awareness.
Okay.
And then belief, bridge building. And I talk about, it's that old field of dreams concept. If we build it, they'll come. You know, what do we need to do to build a bridge?
Mm-hmm. Do you think people have a really hard time with receiving? Like say, a lot of people that, I talk with, they don't think that they're worthy enough to receive something that would really be good.
Yeah, that's true. And again, it goes back to self-talk. It goes back to our orientation when we're children. Many of us were told to, or taught to believe that we must earn what we get. It denotes weakness if we look needy. There are all kinds of issues there. Sometimes it's not only a matter of worthiness, but it's a matter of pride.
Mm-hmm.
And stubbornness as well. But often people believe that they're not worthy. And the way we change that is, again, with our self-talk. We have to start telling ourselves we are worthy.
So if somebody wanted to know maybe what words to use, what words would you kind of tell them to do that so they would feel like it's okay to accept?
Well, anytime we say the words I am, that triggers something within us. At the very cellular level,
mm-hmm.
It's like our cells are like the old E.F. Hutton commercial. Our cells cup their ears in anticipation that we're getting ready to say something profound. And so I would, with affirmations, often I start with the words I am. I am brilliant. I am worthy. I am loved.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is important, especially the last statement that you said, because a lot of people I think, have a hard time believing that, you know, they're loved, whether, you know, loved by because of themselves or
right.
other people love them.
Right. And we look at, too, we look at the effects of words. If you look at studies, I looked at an interesting study about water at one of the science museums that they had some large photographs of water, that microscopic or the microscopic view of water molecules,
mm-hmm.
and they had one picture or several pictures where they had taken a glass of water and they had actually voiced loving words and kind words in a very soft, loving tone over the water, and the water was just, the molecules were pristine. They looked like snowflakes, very symmetrical. Just beautiful. They look like crystals. And then they took the very same water, and they showed several photographs where they had actually spoken over the glass words like, "I hate you," "I wish you were dead," and spoke that in a harsh tone. And it looked like somebody threw a hand grenade into these water molecules. What were once pristine were now fragmented and torn apart. And imagine if we can do that with water that we speak to in a glass, what happens to the inside of our body from the words that we speak when we look at 75% of our physical makeup is water.
Mm-hmm.
So we begin to speak either life into existence, into our body, or we can speak destruction.
Mm-hmm. The movie What the Bleep Do We Know?
That's exactly one. I was going to say What the Bleep Do We Know actually has a scene in there,
mm-hmm.
that talks about the water.
Yeah, for the people who have not seen the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, it is, to me, it was a great movie.
It's outstanding.
You know, and a lot of people, because they didn't show it at all of the theaters, they only, you know, picked some.
Uh-huh.
And I really think they should have shown it in all of them and allowed people to find out about it so they could watch it, because it was a very good film about what you do to yourself on a daily basis.
Yes.
You know, and how to change it, basically. And it was very good.
Mm-hmm. And there's a proverb that says that the tongue has the power of life or death.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can speak that. And if you read Don Miguel Ruiz's book, The Four Agreements,
mm-hmm.
Ruiz talks about the fact that our words are our most powerful tools, and they can be our most powerful weapons as well. Whoever said sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may never hurt me, lied.
Yeah, they got it backwards.
They sure did. Because words destroy dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Words break people's spirits. You know, they may not break the bones, but they break something that's much more eternal there.
Very, very much so. One of the other books that you wrote was The Ten Commandments for Building High Performance Teams.
Ten Commitments,
I'm sorry.
But it does sound a lot, and that's a common error that I've had people say. But it's not actually commandments. There's 10 commitments that we can make to build high performance teams.
So again, do you like some of the words that you were used? Is that kind of what it's based on, or how you're presenting it?
Well, 10 Commitments for Building High Performance Teams is a little different book. It's actually four leaders, four managers building teams from the beginning, from putting a team together to developing values, team, you know, rules of engagement, and how to get the most out of a team.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to do with some of this. You know, leaders are much more effective when their tone of voice and what they say to people is uplifting rather than destructive.
That's, I would think, very true. Now, the next one, we may get a little rise out of some women here, but called The Ten Commitments for Men.
Well, Nancy, it's interesting because probably 50% of the good reviews I've had from this book have been for women. Of course,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of women buy buy this book for their husbands or their significant others, too, I think. But I've had several women, quite a few women, that have commented to me, why did you make this, what did you entitle this, Ten Commandments for Men? Because these principles are for women as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're actually, they're principles for higher living, and that's not gender specific at all. Although I refer a lot to the male gender, because this book is actually written for men. And the reason why I wrote this book for men was on a request from my publisher to write a secular book for men. You know, there are a lot of, if you go out there and look at Amazon.com and you start looking at books for women as opposed to men, there are many, many, many more books for women than there are men. Now, there are some for men, but they're more religious or spiritual oriented. And so this book is a secular book, although it does have a real spiritual essence to it. But that's why I wrote it for men. I may go back and redo this book someday and actually change the title. Actually, my newest book that'll be released at the beginning of March is entitled "How Bad Do You Really Want It?"
Mm-hmm.
And that's really a commitments book for or success principles for all people. There are 21 success principles.
When somebody wants something really bad, what advice would you give them to keep following in order for them to attain it?
Well, one, we have to look at, is it, there's a fine line between having a dream and having a fantasy. So we have to look at, and we have to make sure that it's not a fantasy for us, because we waste our time with fantasies
mm-hmm.
sometimes. So we look at the dream. What is my dream? And our dream always has to do with our purpose in life, and our purpose is a result of several things. One, our purpose is what we're purposed to do is something that we're good at. We have a talent for. And it's also something we love to do. We have a passion for. And then the third aspect of this, it's something that gives us some sort of reward, whether it be monetary or some other type of reward. So when we look at, if we want something really bad, we look at how much does this fit in with my purpose? And then also, I urge people to establish what their values are. What do they value? Because our values are going to define us as an individual. Einstein once said, rather than be a person of success, strive to be a person of value. And so when we establish our values, then everything we want and we aspire to have in life should be filtered through that. And when I set a goal in my own life, I check that goal. I run that goal against my values. Can I do this? Can I pursue this goal and accomplish this without violating my own code of ethics or my own code of behavior here? And then also I look, this is fitting with my purpose. Is this in alignment with my talents? Is it in alignment with my passion? And then is this going to be rewarding for me in some way? And then I set a goal to go forward, if that's the case, a very specific, measurable goal, and then break it down into smaller chunks, because what I want to do is I want to, it's the old adage, by the inch, it's a cinch. I want to begin taking small steps toward the accomplishment of the goal.
Do you think people, in general, have a hard time deciding what their purpose may be?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that probably a large percentage of people don't even think about it. They get up every day and it's kind of like Groundhog Day. They do the same deal over and over and over again. You know, Dale Carnegie once said that most people aim at nothing in life and hit it with amazing accuracy. And they do. They're wandering through life asleep. And so when we awaken, when we really awaken, is when we look at, what am I here for? What's the meaning of all of this? And when we do that, when that awakens within us, then it starts to come to us. You know, we can't have a question that an answer doesn't already exist. Mm-hmm. See, the question is the effect. The answer was the cause. Mm-hmm. And so when I began to wake up and I start to think, what is my purpose? You know, then the answer comes because it's been there all along.
There's also that statement, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result.
That's right. That's right. And so we have to, it's more than just wishing. You know, we can wish and wish and wish and wish. We can pray and pray and pray and pray. But there's no saying that, you know, we need to pray and move our feet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to. Yeah, we need to wish, but we need to do something with that. That wish needs to have legs to it.
Do you have in mind another book already?
Yes, I do. After How Bad Do You Really Want It, my next book will be If Not You, Who? If Not Now, When?
Okay. Those are good questions just in general.
Yes, they are. They are. And I often ask people, why do what most people can and will when you have the opportunity to do what most people can't or won't?
Mm-hmm.
And most people, let's face it, most people aren't going to.
Mm-mm.
It's too easy to get, you know, go home every night and watch television.
That's very true. Now, did you do hypnotherapy or did you just get your license for clinical therapy?
No, I do. I have a practice that I use, or actually I use that in my coaching practice, hypnotherapy. Because so many people have, hypnotherapy is a great tool because it opens the window to the subconscious. And the subconscious is very suggestible as well, or open to suggestion. So we can actually open up the subconscious and then slip suggestions into it. But also what we do, what I use hypnotherapy with, is to help people overcome fears, mm-hmm. even phobias. You know, almost the basis of almost all phobias are loss of control. And if we look at that somewhere in our history, and usually at a very young age, people who have phobias had a traumatic incident that marked them, that actually photographed that into the amygdala within the limbic system of the brain. And so every situation that's remotely like that, the brain pulls that back up. It says, oh, okay, I know what to do with this because I've seen this before. So it takes that and plays, it's like playing a tape in our memory or in our consciousness. And so we respond the same way we did maybe when we were a child.
Mm-hmm.
And so with hypnotherapy, what we do is we go back to those, the original, and we can, you can, I've gone back to people, with people back into the womb.
Mm-hmm.
Because the subconscious registers every memory there. But we go back in and clip the emotional strings to that memory, where they still remember that, but there's no emotional episode attached to it.
I've heard repeatedly by people, oh, I can't be hypnotized. No, I've tried and they can't do it. Do you find that there are some people that cannot be hypnotized?
I think that if we want to be hypnotized, there's a difference between, you know, if people are, and a lot of people say I can't be hypnotized, what they're saying is, really in essence, they're saying I fear losing control and I'm not going to lose control.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a difference between can't and won't. And so most of those people I see, for some reason they won't. They won't let themselves go. But I've had a lot of clients that have said they can't be, and you know, that's, they've never been able to, and all, they didn't think they could be, and it worked fine with them. What we ask people to do is just get their thoughts out of the way. Just if you can just, if I can just get you to sit alone or sit quietly for some time, mm-hmm. and relax, and just focus on your breathing, and you know, don't resist thoughts, but just let thoughts pass through, kind of like a stream of water, but don't connect to any of them. But don't resist it, don't fight it. Then they can be hypnotized. Now, hypnosis is different than the Hollywood impression. You know, I actually have people ask me, okay, am I going to cluck like a chicken, or you know, am I going to run around? You're going to have me doing stupid things? No. In fact, with real hypnosis, you never lose consciousness. You don't go into a state of oblivion where you don't remember anything, and it's a whole different situation than clinical hypnotherapy is. And so it's just more of a state of just induced relaxation. And through doing that, then we have a tremendous amount of recall in the subconscious.
If somebody wanted to get a hold of you, Tom, how would they do that?
The best way to get in touch with me is go through my website, TomMasseyInc.com.
And on your website, would they also be able to get your books?
Yes, they can order my books. They can see the services that I offer as a coach and as a trainer. And also my contact information is there as well. They can send me an email, or they could actually pick up the phone and call me.
Do you go out and do lectures and stuff for people?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I speak to about 300 groups a year.
Now, is that also on your website so they could find out maybe where you're going
yes,
to be?
Yes, absolutely.
Are you going to be coming to Chicago?
Well, I don't have anything scheduled, but there's a distinct possibility.
Okay. That's where I'm at. So if you come here, you let me know, okay?
Okay. I'd be glad to maybe enter in some sort of joint type of venture with you, too.
Well, that would
be fun. I'm putting together, right now, I'm putting together a retreat on how bad do you really want it. And a retreat for people who want to learn the principles and begin to put those principles into practice in their own lives.
Okay. And how long would the retreat be for?
It'll be a two-day retreat.
And do you have a place already picked out?
Pardon me?
Do you have a place already picked out for the retreat?
No, there'll be a series of retreats throughout the country.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's real important. Now, in this last book that you wrote, How Bad Do You Really Want It? And then it actually goes a little bit further and says, getting from where you are to where you want to go.
Uh-huh. Getting from where you are to where you want to be.
Okay. If people, you know, decide that, say that they're in St. Louis and decide that they want to get to New York, and they're only looking at one roadmap, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the only roadmap that's out there, does it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And really, Nancy, probably the best thing to do is, if first of all, we set a goal. We just, if that's what we want to do, if we want to go to New York, then we decide, okay, I want to go to New York, and I want to be there by June 2008. So that's the first thing we do. And then our brain starts to do interesting things to work on it. The Maxwell Maltz, a number of years ago, wrote a book called Psycho-Cybernetics and talked about the incredible capacity of the brain to begin to put things together for us. And also within the brain, there's a part of our brain called the reticular activating system, the RAS. And the way that works, it makes us sensitive to the things out there in the environment. They're important to us. And at any given time, we have a lot of stimuli, but we really don't pay attention to very many things that aren't important to us. Let me give you an example. Have you ever bought a car and drove that thing off the lot, and all of a sudden, everywhere you go, you see that car.
Mm-hmm.
You see models of that car. Now, did they, you know, did everybody just all of a sudden go out and buy that same car? No, they were there but all along, but you didn't pay attention to it till now. Also, the way the RAS works is I had a friend that lived next door to about a half a block away from a train track. And when he first moved in, a train came by every night in the middle of the night and awakened him. But after a while, he got to the point he didn't notice it anymore. And I spent the night with that friend one time. And in the middle of the night, a train roared by. Well, it took me by surprise. It awakened me out of a deep sleep. I must have jumped 2 feet off the bed. I thought the world was coming to an end. And the next morning, I asked the guy, I said, how do you sleep with that train? He said, what train? And so that's also how the RAS works. It filters out things that aren't important to us, so it helps us to really zero in. So sometimes the answer to how is yes. We just say yes. Yeah, yes, this is what I want to do. And then the brain starts to put together opportunities for us out there. So we see, you know, and also the subconscious starts to, especially if we begin to bring this up over and over again, the subconscious begins to create the agenda for us as well. And our subconscious has a much greater power than just our own physical being. Our subconscious starts to help work on putting together the people and the situations to make that happen. And so we set a goal to do that, and you know, sometime later somebody comes up, taps us on the shoulder and says, excuse me, would you like to go to New York? And so that's the way the brain works.
Now, you're also a senior executive for the Federal Recycling Technologies.
Yes, I'm a senior executive for this company. It's a new company, and I'm excited about this because these are some of the brightest minds in the area of, and this is a great topic right now, you know, with the greening of the earth and the greening of the environment. This is an international think tank, is what it is, of people that have come together that are committed to work in the area of recycling and recovery, resource recovery, to utilize the material that we have out there today to recycle it or recreate it, so we don't have to continue to exploit, you know, the earth.
We're excited about this.
This is, and you'll hear more and more about this company in the next few years as well.
I think it's really important that people start to be more aware than what they've had in the last hundreds of years, let me tell you. Right now, some of the towns, some of the cities are actually charging an extra tax for water that is bottled in plastic.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Like Chicago just started doing it, for example. And one of their main reasons is because of the plastic is so hard for it to, you know, be gotten rid of or whatever the case may be.
Uh-huh.
People in general have a hard time with that idea because they're looking at it that it's just the, you know, the towns, villages, government trying to make more money.
Uh-huh.
But in reality, what they're really saying is pretty true, the way I understand it.
Uh-huh.
As far as it, you know, eating up a lot of the earth, you know, natural resources,
right,
and everything.
Absolutely. And, well, two things I see here. Plastics come from petroleum products as well. And so we're going to have to get off of our dependency on fossil fuels. And then also, what are we going to do with this? Because, you know, like you said, it has a half-life of, you know, thousands of years or more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what's going to, you know, where's this stuff going to go? But anytime there's an innovative idea, it doesn't matter what it is, then there'll be three responses. First of all, the first response is just ridicule. People will ridicule and laugh at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just stupid. They can't be. And then the next level, if it stays around and people and we continue to persist with this innovative idea, then people begin to oppose it. It passes from ridicule to opposition, and sometimes violent opposition. You know, Einstein once said that geniuses are often met with violent opposition by those with mediocre minds. And so there's a violent opposition. But if we continue then and hold firm and be steadfast with these ideas, and that's what's happening right now with Al Gore. Mm-hmm. You know, people at first, you know, and they want to put up the smokescreen about, you know, the scrutinize the messenger. Well, we didn't like his politics. Well, he's not, you know, look what he's doing. No, look at the message that he's saying. And so there's ridicule, there's violent opposition, and that's where we are now with a large amount of the public. But the third level is acceptance, public acceptance of the inevitable. And that's where we're getting to with this whole environmental thing.
Yeah, I saw Al Gore's movie, The Inconvenience Truth, which was actually quite good. He even showed he had a sense of humor and all of it, but it was a very strong, big message about what is really going on in the world today that people just seem to go, oh, it's going to be okay. And I look back and I go, no, it's not going to be okay.
That's right.
You know, I remember when there was like four definite seasons, and we're not seeing that anymore.
That's right. We're seeing record weather everywhere, and uncharacteristic weather as well. Look at, I mean, even the in Iraq, did you read they had a snowfall?
Yeah, they had snow.
You know, and they don't ever have snow, you know. So there are things that are happening, and then some people say, well, you know, we're on 100,000-year cycles, we're on 25-year, all these different people have all these rebuttals for it. But think about it. Think about it. How long can we continue to exploit the Earth at the rate we've done and continue to do that?
My answer to that is not much longer because
not
it's
much
already
longer.
Changing.
That's right. And so greed, you know, there's two things that hold the world, that kind of run the world, and that's greed and faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so greed drives a lot of people, and so they don't think about those long-term repercussions. But if we don't do something, and it's not only, it really, it's not only with the environment. We have some problems in this country if we don't do something, a change. It goes back to the insanity thing again.
Mm-hmm.
We can't keep doing the same thing, expect different results. You know, right now, our children, our grandchildren, are heavily in debt by what we're spending today.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to stop doing that. That's irresponsible.
And people are hearing that statement going, well, what do you mean by that? You know, and I sit around and I look at all the things that are going on and I'm going, how can people not be aware of this, or how can they try to ignore it? It is going to slap them in the face so hard that it's going to slap them into next Tuesday, you know?
Well, yeah, and on the defense of people, let me add this, though. There's a difference between apathy and resignation.
Okay.
With apathy, we don't care. With resignation, we've given up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that a lot of people they're plagued with resignation. You know, Thoreau said most men live in desperation. I think most men live in resignation in our times.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think that we can make any difference. We don't think that we can impact the world, but we can. You know, I heard a quote said, "If you think you're too small to make an impact, try going to bed with a mosquito in the room." And so, you know, that we can make an impact, and that's what we have to do. We have to do what we can do,
mm-hmm.
And if each one of us do it, then we do. We do make an impact. You know, Margaret Mead, the anthropologist, said, never underestimate the power of a small group of concerned and committed citizens to change the world.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, it's the only thing it has. Mm-hmm. So we can make a difference. We don't have to live in resignation. But we have to start. We want to think globally, but we have to act locally.
Mm-hmm.
So we start recycling ourselves, you know. And we start doing the little things. You know, we change our light bulbs out, and we change the types of cars that we drive, and and we start saving our money rather than spending so much. And you know, so there's some small things we can do. We can start becoming more active in the political process. Let's get some people in Washington that have character, mm-hmm. instead of, you know, a bunch of characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we look at it. How much of the electorate votes?
Right.
You know, not very many, because people just, they live in resignation. I think it's more resignation, Nancy, than I think it's apathy. Hopefully.
Hopefully. The other thing, we're not quite out of time, almost, but not quite, but please, Tom, give out the way they could get a hold of you again.
Okay, TomMasseyInc.com. That's TomMasseyInc.com. TomMasseyInc.com has all of my contact information. You can purchase my books through there. You can send me an email if you have any questions. I answer all of my email.
Okay, now the next book that's coming out, do you have a target date for that?
Our target date is March 1st.
Okay, so that's this one, How
Bad Do You Really Want It?
Okay, and I like that really because it's all in big capital letters.
That really is in big capital letters, that's right.
The really is important.
Yes.
And then the book after this one, do you have a target date for that one?
The target date for that will be probably fourth quarter of 2008.
Okay, so it's still going to be this year?
Yes.
Okay. And again, one more time, give out the way they can get a hold of you.
Yes. TomMasseyInc.com. TomMasseyInc.com.
And Tom, do you have any last little, like, closing, quickie little statements to help people kind of wake themselves up?
Well, I think that you've got to stand for something. You've got to stand for something. If we don't stand for something, we'll fall for anything. And my biggest concern about our society today, and it goes back to that living in resignation, is we don't have the passion that we need. We have to look at, establish a good why. What's a good why in your life? Something you can get excited about, because that's going to be the impetus to get you up out of bed every day with enthusiasm and passion and a desire to do something with your life.
That's great, Tom. It's been great having you on my show.
It's been great being on your show.
And you know, we'll let that other book come out. We'll get this new one coming out, and then we'll have you back on the show again, and we can talk about that one and go into a little bit more detail so that all the listeners can say, yeah, I bought his books, and man, they're really good.
Well, I still read. I read my ABC's books every day still. When I get through, I read a chapter out of each one of them each day because I really want to walk this talk.
Mm-hmm. And that's great. A lot of people talk it and don't walk it.
That's right.
But I would again like to thank you for being on the show. It has been my pleasure.
Thank you, Nancy. If I can ever do anything for you, let me know.
You let me know when you're back in Chicago. We're going to come here, okay?
Okay.
All right. You take care.
All right. Bye now.
Thanks to all the listeners out there. May God bless all of you. Remember about the donations from my 501C, A Child's Miracle Mind. May God bless you. Take care and have a great week. Bye now.